Hello and welcome to Monocle 24's The Urbanist, the show all about the cities we live in. I'm Andrew Tuck. Coming up on today's programme.
So usually on city planning, you can't start an operation and realise it in 5 years. Usually you need more time. So I always think that you can readapt projects while you realise them.
More than 1,000 urban development experts and public officials from across Europe and even further afield gathered this week for the 2021 Urban Land Institute's Europe Conference. In line with the current climate, this was, of course, a virtual affair. But as always, an event packed with great guests sharing their ideas on how to make our cities better. So join us over the next 30 minutes as we meet some of the people campaigning for better urban changes. That's all coming up right here on The Urbanist with me, Andrew Tuck. Despite the pandemic taking centre stage in the urban discourse over the past year, climate change remains the biggest and the realest threat to all of us. So it's only fitting that we begin our show with Sir David King, an emeritus professor of chemistry at the University of Cambridge and also the founder and chair of the Centre for Climate Repair. Sir David took part in a panel discussion about real estate and about how developers can help us achieve some of the climate goals. Sir David, thank you so much for joining us here on The Urbanist. Now, over recent weeks, we've spoken here to developers who are being very progressive in their attempts to fight climate change, but it feels like a very complicated situation because this week we had an announcement here in the UK about cladding on buildings, where we have some 1,700 high-rises that were badly built with potentially dangerous cladding. How confident are you that there's been a seismic change now and that the world of real estate and developers are aligned with these new idealistic ambitions of delivering buildings that will aid us all around this climate change debate?
I wouldn't say I'm super confident, but what I would say about the cladding situation is I think it's unforgivable, right? So in other words, fire safety measures are a big part of regulatory systems in buildings. And quite simply, these were evaded in order to increase the profits of the companies that were putting these claddings up. So I think what is particularly disappointing about this is that we do have good fire regulations in place. However, the cladding was put on those buildings precisely because we wanted to improve the energy efficiency of the flats in the buildings. And it's just so shameful. I can hardly bring myself to say the words. But I think this is an illustration of the inertia in the building industry, the total focus on large profits at the cost of the future of our country and the world. I think what we need to focus on is that the world will not be a livable place for most of us going forward in time. And in my talk today, I showed that in 30 years' time, we're looking just in one part of the world, Southeast Asia in some detail, 200 to 300 million refugees because their place of abode is no longer livable, including cities like Ho Chi Minh City in Vietnam, including Jakarta, Calcutta, Mumbai, these major cities that will not be livable even by mid-century if we continue the way we're going now. And now we've got to anticipate sea level rises such that global cities sitting on coastlines may no longer be livable. The city of Jakarta is certainly one of the first to go. And yet that's a city that has been built to a very high modern standard over just the last 20 years as the Indonesian economy has taken off. And we're talking now about a city where the Indonesian government is talking about shifting the capital to higher ground. So this is an enormous challenge. And until people realize that there is very little future for themselves, if they're youngish people, for their children and their grandchildren, if we continue in this way.
And tell me, when we look at cities like Jakarta, I know there's a plan to, as you said, to move the entire capital, to rebuild a new capital, but they're looking at a site that potentially involves forest clearance. You rebuild a whole city, I presume. A whole class of people would get left behind in the existing city of Jakarta. You create one of these administrative capitals. That's no way round this, is it? We can't build our ways out of these problems.
So then the question has got to be, what is the way around it? And I have set up a Center for Climate Repair at Cambridge, and the center is working with universities around the world. We're creating sister hubs in climate repair around the world. And the objective is really threefold. One, deepen rapid emissions reduction. We've got to achieve this in just a few years to manage this problem, to try and avoid these massive challenges. We have, secondly, to remove greenhouse gases. We've already put far too much greenhouse gas into the atmosphere. That is what's creating all of these challenges, and we need to remove it at least as quickly as we have been putting it out. That means removing 40 billion tons of greenhouse gases a year going forward in time. And thirdly, we have to learn how to refreeze the Arctic, the Antarctic, and the Himalayas, because removing greenhouse gases is going to take far too long. So there are all sorts of technological and scientific challenges that have to be met with technological solutions. But in addition, it is so important that the industry that is involved in putting in place new infrastructure that has an expectation of a long lifetime, they need to understand that their investments will be stranded assets unless they do this properly.
Tell me, the notion of refreezing the ice sheets has gained some great coverage. People are really intrigued by this concept, because I think mostly we feel it's a kind of a one-way path and not heading in the right direction. Could you just explain to listeners why you feel it could be possible to reverse this process and what would be needed to do that?
So we're looking at a range of about 12 different technologies that have been put forward to refreeze, in particular, the Arctic. So our focus is on the Arctic region, because we can see that Greenland ice is beginning to melt and melt faster and faster year on year. And when all of Greenland ice has melted, sea levels globally will have risen by 7 meters, 23 feet. And so we can see that will take out, long before we get to that level, most of our major coastal cities. So I think the focus on looking at the Arctic is at the moment looking at marine cloud brightening. We want to have white clouds that reflect sunlight over the North Pole region during the polar summer in that region to reflect sunlight away from the Arctic Sea. The Arctic Sea is covered with ice every year during the winter, but that single layer growth of ice is melted very quickly in the Arctic summer. So we need to see that we protect the Arctic Sea in the Arctic summer from the melting of the ice layer that's on it, so that each year we grow a new layer of ice and regrow the ice cap that used to sit over the North Pole.
Sir David King there, and thank you for joining us. What's the best way to organise urban life? For urban scientist Carlos Moreno, the chair of entrepreneurship, territory and innovation at the Pantheon Sorbonne University in Paris, this year remains all about the local approach and ensuring that citizens have access to services in their own neighbourhoods. Moreno has been a champion of the 15-minute city concept, helping cities around the world to implement it. When Mayor Anne Hidalgo announced last year her plan to turn Paris into a 15-minute city, you can be assured that Moreno would have been involved. And he's also currently the Mayor of Paris's special envoy for smart cities. Monocle's Carlotta Ribello caught up with Carlos to discuss all of this, and she started by asking him to explain exactly what the 15-minute city is.
Our vision about the 15-minute city, it is a new organization of the urban life. We wanted to provide the citizens with 6 urban social functions: to live, to work, to supply, to care, to educate, to enjoy, within a reduced perimeter by low carbon mobilities, by walk or by foot. we want, in fact, to propose a new model for living in cities based on four pillars: ecology, low carbon city, proximity to optimize the resources in the vicinity, solidarity for create social links in the neighborhood, and citizen participation.
Now, I don't want to focus too much on the current state of the world and the pandemic and COVID, but it's almost, we can't avoid it. But I feel like when we talk about the 15-minute city, actually, a pandemic and shutting down our city centers really shows the need and the importance of making those connections and of creating the 15-minute city.
Yes, of course. So the 15-minute city, it's a concept that has become a very popular worldwide for two reasons. The first one was the climate change, the global warming, because with the 15-minute concept, we have the possibility to live low-carbon city with real reduction of CO2. And with the pandemic crisis, several cities around the world has been adopting this concept. Of course, the city of Paris, the mayor of Paris, Anne Hidalgo, has adopted this way for the next years. And in Europe, the city of Milan, with the mayor Giuseppe Sala, has been adopting this concept. In fact, this crisis is a new big opportunity for rediscovering proximity, for using soft mobilities, for developing bike lanes, and for proposing a new model for living in this social proximity.
And Carlos, just finally, perhaps, if you had to give advice or tips for any, you know, local leader around the world listening to this conversation and thinking, you know what, I might try to implement a 15-minute city in my city, what would be your advice? Where should they start?
Yeah, this is a very good question. We need to define a powerful roadmap based on three elements. The first element, a new urban policy for the next years with the common good at the heart. The common good is very important for developing a real 15-minute city, not only a city with the gentrification, with the new district. Common good, it is the possibility for the local governance to play a very powerful role as a regulator. The second point, of course, is to define well-covered city, bike-covered city, greener city, a livable city, to rediscover public spaces in order to propose in the public spaces the all kinds of activities for citizen dwellers. And the third point is to explore the resources in the proximity. In fact, the 15-minute city concept, this is a great way for changing our urban lifestyle.
The urban scientist Carlos Moreno there, speaking to Monocle's Carlotta Ribello. As we've just heard, Paris is one of Europe's major capitals at the forefront of the 15-minute city movement. Part of the re-election campaign of Mayor Anne Hidalgo, and prompted by the pandemic forcing people to live more locally, this is a plan where quality of life for urban dwellers is paramount. Marion Waller is an advisor to the Mayor of Paris working on this issue. Her work made her one of the winners of this year's 2021 Urban Land Institute European Talent Award. Well, Marion, thank you for joining us on The Urbanist today. We've explored the concept of the 15-minute city just now, so could you perhaps explain to us what you're doing about this idea in Paris? How does this play out on the streets of the city?
So in Paris, we try to apply this idea of the 15-minute city in all our urban projects at a very street level. So it means that we look at every street and we try to think differently about the public space we have. For example, we want to transform parking spaces because we think that in every street, if we transform, for example, half of parking spaces, we could plant trees, we could install playgrounds for children, we could really bring a lot of services for Parisian people. And so we We look at every neighborhood and every street to identify what is missing, what we could actually reinforce. And we also try to make a better use of our public equipments, for example, to open our schools during weekends so that children can enjoy playing in the schoolyards and creating like culture events there. And I think it's not so much about building, it's really more about transforming the existing space and the existing building.
But tell me, the notion of this 15-minute city, especially in central Paris, wasn't it kind of always there in the original city anyway? You know, when you have an apartment block, there was always some industry in the past in the city, there was always good retail, there was always a place to play in the park in most parts of central Paris. So is it partly going back in time as well to how neighborhoods used to work?
In fact, yes, in Paris, we are lucky because our city is very dense, and the Haussmannian model, so how our city is shaped, helps having a lot of services at a walking distance. So actually, that's already part of Paris' DNA, but we want to reinforce it because we think it's one of the strengths of Paris, and we think it's really key for our attractiveness. Because when people come to Paris or if they want to live in Paris, they know that they will be able to access, for example, a bakery by 3 minutes of walking or biking. And it's the same for most services. And so that's very particular to Paris because we have this high density. And so we want to build on that existing model and that existing qualities, so that we reinforce these qualities, and especially we want to reinforce the density in green spaces, because we think that we could intensify the presence of green, of trees in Paris, and that we could have more proximity green spaces on little squares, on some streets that we will transform in like garden streets, so that there is also a very high density in green spaces.
And finally, Marion, tell us, you know, I guess the reason that many of us live in big cities is because they can be exciting. Let's hope we get back to more normal times in the coming year or so. But, you know, we like them because there are nightclubs, that there are great museums. The centre of the city is a big attraction. This isn't saying to people, you should find everything you need in your few streets around your house, is it? It's still saying that the city is a big, exciting place that should be explored too.
Of course, I think it's really possible to combine both approaches, to have at the neighborhood level all the daily services and still to, of course, to keep this metropolitan dream, the idea that you can go anywhere at any time to meet your friends, to go to nightclubs. And I think people want both, actually, and that's also our role as a city administration to improve those two scales.
That was Marion Waller, who's an advisor to the mayor of Paris. Now we turn to Amsterdam. Josje van der Veer is the director of urban planning and sustainability for the city of Amsterdam. She's responsible for a mammoth task, the grand vision for the future of the city and how to better use existing buildings and public space. Josje took part in a panel about this idea of putting all the pieces together, all the elements, institutions and people that need to act as one to actually deliver change. And she joins me now. Josje, one of the things I know that you're very involved in is the issue of housing. Perhaps as a starter, you could explain to our listeners what the situation is in Amsterdam and what the need is here.
Yeah, we need about like a middle large city, about 150,000 units we need in the city. The housing shortage is enormous and young people cannot find a house, and especially also the affordability of housing is under tremendous pressure.
Where is your intention to put these units? Again, the same debate in many cities. You know, Amsterdam is a prime example of a city with an historical, highly prized centre of the city where people are cautious about adding in too much density or adding in towers. But you don't want to put everybody right on the periphery of the city if there are no jobs there, if there are a few connections. So where are you pushing into?
Yeah, well, that's a very good question. What we try to do is, and you have to bear in mind that, of course, the scale of Amsterdam and the metropolitan region of Amsterdam is much smaller than, for instance, London, the greater area, or Paris. So we don't compare ourselves to that, of course. But what we try to work on is a polycentric city, where we have actually a relaxation of the inner city, which is too crowded and too densely. And we really invest in complete centers with a highly mixed area, with amenities, with residential, with working spaces in the three parts of Amsterdam, which is called New West, North and Southeast. And there we see a lot of possibility of densifying the area and at the same time adding quality of the public space in a radical green design of the public space. So we don't start with where do the cars have to go. We start with a walkable and bicycle city. And of course, at the same time, you have then to invest in public transport. So we have some subway lines and light rail lines, which we expand to these areas so that they're very good connected towards the inner city.
And tell me, it's a question we've been asking people quite a lot in recent weeks. It's really interesting when you've set these projects and plans up in what we all now call normal times, pre the pandemic, and now we're still in the midst of this thing that the target end date seems to move away from us all the time. Has this changed how you've thought about these projects? How has this past year impacted on the kind of work that you're doing?
Yeah, the pandemic really helped in the notion of the urgency of these more sustainable city development. We see the importance of a green area, and let's say within a 5-minute pace of your home. We see the importance of good accessibility to healthcare, to education, because it's widening the gap between the, let's say, the privileged and the less privileged. The COVID-19 pandemic really hits hard the neighborhoods which were already having difficulties with, let's say, the development of the population. So what we do, we combine, let's say, the more spatial and energy-directed developments of the city. We integrate it now more with the social side of development and also the economic side and attention for education and healthy environment. So that's a whole integral approach, which helps us to really raise the equality and raise the possibilities for people to grab their chances and be a more complete city with equal chances for each.
That was Josje van der Veer, who is the Director, Urban Planning and Sustainability for the City of Amsterdam. Finally, we turn to Milan. These past 12 months have been challenging to cities around the world, but for Milan, being one of the very first cities in Europe to go into lockdown, it meant that local leaders had to learn on the go and adapt very quickly. But the pandemic hasn't deterred them or stopped any of the projects that they had for the city. If anything, it's been used as an opportunity to change mentalities and also the urban environment. Pier Francesco Moran is the Deputy Mayor for Urban Planning, Green Areas and Agriculture for the City of Milan. You might remember him from April last year when we spoke to Pier Francesco about the city's Strade Aperte scheme to reduce car use after the first lockdown. Moran was talking earlier at the conference about the lessons and the plans his city now has for the future. And I'm very happy to say that he rejoins me now. Welcome back, Pier Francesco. How much do you think Milan has changed over the past 12 months?
I think we changed a lot as citizens and as a city. We felt like we were the center of the world at the end of 2019. The city was going up on every indicator for investments, for social distances. So we stopped immediately in a very good moment for Milan. It has been a hard spring, and then we felt alone. No tourism, few businesses, restaurants and bars were empty. we had to feel to do something new. So we tried to reorganize the city for summer, new pedestrian areas, new bike lanes, new spaces for bars and restaurants. And then the second pandemic moment in autumn. So we think that we have to reimagine a city that will be different from the last decade. It's a moment of transition for every big cities and also for Milan.
There's lots of new projects which are progressing, which are not just bike lanes. In the Porta Nuova district, I know that there's another green tower being planned. The Bosco Verticale has had a great branding exercise for Milan around the world. I think everybody knows about that building, this amazing building covered in greenery. Why are you so interested in this type of building?
We think that the way building can be realized can change. They could be much sustainable, much green. We are also working on affordable housing, on a different idea of Milan where every kind of people can live, not only if you can afford such a rich house. But it's also part of the idea of Milan. It's not just a question of urbanism, but it's also a question of design. We are happy that the main projects of Milan, they didn't stop because of pandemic. Maybe somebody slowed down, but we still have great plans for future. The southern part of Milan will change rapidly because of the Olympic Games, or for the sports arena, for the Olympic Village. We have 200 university students in Milan. It's a very huge number. And we are building a new student housing for them. So we have the idea that we can go out of this crisis, of this world crisis, and bring our place back as a city to be visited, to be a city where young people can spend part of their life.
Another project I know that you're involved in is the repurposing of 7 old railway stations. What's the plans for these?
They are very important because they are 7 and they are all on the border between the center and the periphery of Milan. So to refurbish those areas helps also to reconnect the city. They will be green. 2/3 of those areas will become new parks, but it will also be the places where there is the future of Milan. For example, Scala Romana, that is on the south, it will host the Olympic Village. It has been bought by some operators, including Prada, and it's 2 minutes far from Prada Foundation there. So Scala Romana, Scalo Farini will be what has been Porta Nuova in city life in the last decade. And the idea that Milan is still area to be reimagined, that is something extraordinary for us.
And finally, a question that I always find interesting when I speak to people like yourself is you've hinted there that you've continued with projects that were started prior to the pandemic. Has it been difficult for you personally as you've gone through this year on a project side thinking, will we still want these things in 5 years' time if the world is going to change so rapidly and so fast? Has it kind of really made you question about the kinds of things that you wanted to do?
Well, there is a sort of constitution in the city, we say, that tell us we have to respect the previous job. So usually on city planning, you can't start an operation and realize it in 5 years. Usually you need more time. So I always think that you can readapt the projects while you realize them. If we go back to Porta Nuova, probably at the beginning, it was not so clear that the new park, Biblioteca degli Alberi, or the new square would be so central. It was more just on the mood of skyscrapers. But then we discovered that park and square were so loved by the citizens, and the success was based on the public space. So even in the new project, for example, on the rail yards, we have rules. The rules allows to be adapted year after year when you realize the plan, when there will be Olympic Games, after the Olympic Games. So we have to work in this direction. We can't stop and change. We have to walk and adapt while we work and walk.
Pier Francesco Moran, Deputy Mayor of Urban Planning, Green Areas and Agriculture for the City of Milan. Always great to have you on The Urbanist. Well, that's all for this edition of the show. Today's episode was produced by Carlotta Ribello and David Stevens. David also edited the show. And to play you out this week, well, here's Corey Wong and Kimbra with Design. Thank you for listening, City Lovers. Rediscovering my design.